But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom.
What's happening?
Oh, so much, so much.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get over the sugar fix from last week's show.
I know, that was crazy, man. I mean, that stuff was so good, too. Alpine Bakery, Smithtown, right?
Yes.
Incredible.
Well, it's pretty funny. I had an interesting day last week. For me, it was the ultimate Jewish soul food day.
Oh, yeah? Where'd you go?
I had bagels and lox in the morning.
Nice.
And then dinner. I had Ben's, and all I kept thinking about was you.
that's a little weird, Stu, I got to tell you.
I felt bad that I didn't order the mushroom barley soup and kasha, but yeah. I did have the kasha.
I love kasha. You know, people don't understand really how good it is for you, too. I mean, it's just it's buckwheat groats, believe it or not. It sounds terrible, but it's really good, and I don't know. I enjoy it whenever I go there.
But what makes me bring up the story is I had breakfast with Mom, and that's where the bagels and lox came from. But I walk in the door. She goes, "Did you save me any?" I said, "Save you any what?" She goes, "The rainbow cookies and stuff."
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was I tell you what, you know, it's amazing to me. I mean, I deal with a lot of bakeries sometimes, you know, with the restaurants of, you know, people bring their cakes in and, you know, whatever. And there's an awful lot of times where the stuff that I get from them is kind of, I don't know, it just isn't, you know, I mean, it looks good and it's fine, but it just doesn't taste good. To me, the mark of a great bakery is that the flavor, you know, looks, you can make a cake look nice. And, you know, if you're using, you know, less than stellar ingredients, it's not going to taste as good.
Well, I will admit that I sort of kept some cheese Danish properly packed so that for the next couple of days I could have some morsels with my coffee.
Yeah, now, where did all of those things go? Because there was a lot of that stuff left over. I'm wondering how that...
I promise, all I took was one of the rainbow cookie donuts and a cheese Danish.
All right, we'll let it go. I didn't take anything. I was, thank God, because I need, you know, sugar like I need another tattoo, you know? It's just...
So I just wanted to report back on one of the restaurants that I had an opportunity to dine at the other day. And it's funny because I saw both aspects of the restaurant. I was there at Chris and Tony's over in Syosset. Yeah. And I was there for a political event.
Mm-hmm. You so do a lot of those.
I do.
You're
I
very
do.
Political
so
guy.
One of my roles here at the radio station is to be the
head politician.
Head politician and represent the company.
Nice.
So, but I joined some people to go pregame before the actual networking event. So I got there at the appropriate time, but I walk in, everybody's at the bar. The owner, Chris, and the two of the people that I was meeting there, and there's two salespeople from a wine company.
Oh, really?
And they're busy trying to sell their wares, as they say.
Do you know who
they
were? I probably know them.
I don't have the card with me.
Okay.
I should have brought it.
Yeah, no worries.
But what was interesting was I mentioned you, and they're supposed to get in touch with us possibly to come on to the show. But what was I found interesting is, of course, there was a very attractive young lady leading the sales pitch.
Look out. That's how to get wine sold.
And then there was a gentleman who I guess was from the vineyard. But as it turned out, I was, you know, doing a little bit of questioning. Everybody else was doing a little bit of sampling.
Yeah,
I was
sure.
Doing questioning. And I said, you know, is it have any placement in any retail,
you know?
And they said, no, they were only doing on-premise.
On-premise, yeah.
They said it was a small bottling or...
boutique winery?
Yeah, so they said they don't really have the means to be able to put it out there to the public for retail.
Right. They don't make enough.
Which I thought was interesting because I always have this quandary when I talk to people about beverages being an energy drink, a soda, you know, a mixer. I always say we sample it, people enjoy it, and then they want to get it. And sometimes I deal with one liquor company that says they have a QR code and you can scan it and then see who's local.
Yeah.
And it sort of to me, gets complicated. And I remember back a couple of years ago, I was working with Pepsi, and they had some sort of quasi-mixer. And so we made a signature drink that night or whatever, and people wanted to know, where do you get it?
Right.
And it wasn't so bad because most Targets on Long Island had it, so I could say available at Target.
Target, yeah.
But I did also an energy drink, it was called Lamborghini Energy Drink, and they were in some of the 7-Elevens.
Uh-huh. Surprised they got away with that name.
They actually was legitimately licensed. The ownership decided they wanted to get some additional income, and it became a revenue stream, and they ended up having watches, some leather goods.
Make it up with $300,000 automobiles.
Right. But I think it's very distracting and frustrating to say available at 7-Elevens across, or you know, some 7-Elevens across Long Island.
Occasional 7-Eleven.
You know, so that was terrible. The other thing that with the energy drink is a marketing quandary. Just think about it. Well, again, this was probably about 5-6 years ago, if not more. In today's world, there's so many different energy drinks. But in the old days, it pretty much was Red Bull and a couple other things.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you went into a 7-Eleven, there would be like a whole case, you know, you'd open the door from ceiling to floor, would be different flavors of Red Bull or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you'd have, you know, if you were lucky, two shelves with two cans on each shelf of the Lamborghini energy drink.
Uh-huh.
And it's not obvious. And then, you know, I had to do my salesmanship. When I was there, there's somebody walked in and whatever, and I'm talking this, that, and the other, and the guy goes, I'm going to try it. And then I realized it was 20 minutes to get the guy to buy one can of an energy drink. So
that's a hard sales pitch, yeah.
And then even in the day, there was Ed Hardy Vodka, and we used to work with Stu Leonard.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they did a tasting day, it was real good. And again, it goes to, you know, they'd have somebody up front by the register, usually a young lady, and sampling and pointing to people where it is on the shelf or whatever. But when that's all said and done, you have 40 different, and that's probably a low number, of vodkas on the shelf.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you got one row of Ed Hardy vodka. The only thing that stood out was the label, but it's marketing food products, I find to be...
Yeah, it's difficult, you know?
Yeah.
Ed Hardy, wasn't he? He's some kind of abstract artist, right?
Yeah, I believe he was, I forget the name of... Christian Andujar or something.
I always get him mixed up with Ed Roth, Ed Big Daddy Roth, the Rat Fink guy from the 60s.
Oh, really?
Culture guy. Yeah, yeah.
There's a couple of I think it's Christian Andujar, was Ed Hardy, and then there's Von Dutch. And a shameless plug, my son's works for a fragrance distributor, and Von Dutch was a sort of a like an Ed Hardy type thing, I guess tattoo type thing. A biker guy, and they used to have trucker hats maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And they're bringing the brand back. He's doing a fragrance with them, a men's fragrance and a woman's fragrance.
I had a woman years ago buy me an Ed Hardy shirt that looked more like a blouse, you know. And you know me, I'm no fashion icon by any stretch of the imagination. I'm a T-shirts and jeans guy, right? And so I never wore it, you know. How come you don't wear it? Because I feel like, you know, I feel like Sophie, you know, when I put it on.
They were usually pretty colorful and maybe sometimes even glittery. The Von Dutch was more biker image.
Yeah.
But I was going back to the networking event over in Chris and Tony's. And so I pregame, we had... a really, really incredible dish. I've known about it and enjoy it many times. But instead of being fried calamari, it's like a sautéed. It's sort of cooked in a red broth.
Right. Right.
And everybody got a kick out of this bald-headed guy sweating.
Had some chili in it?
It had some flame. And, you know, they were really... enjoying.
You're patting the top of your head with a napkin? And
yes, very, very much so.
It's not a good look.
And then we had, I guess, some broccoli rabe with a white fish that they had cooked, which was really, really good. But then, so that was a sit-down.
Yeah.
Then we joined the rest of the networking group, and they had a buffet set up. And it was just, you know, a really, really nice selection. Anything from, it was a high-end networking thing, fundraiser for a local candidate.
Okay.
So they had steak, and they had an interesting shrimp dish. It was like a I guess, sautéed or sort of grilled shrimp that was butterflied, so it was like a big piece, with burnt string beans.
Burnt string beans.
But it was just really incredible. Then they had chicken meatballs and regular meatballs or whatever. Yeah. But it was just really, really, really well done. And I go, kudos to Chris and Tony's. I really enjoy it. And Big Chris is one of the owners. And believe it or not, Chris and Tony's, Tony is the chef, and he's the other owner.
All right.
And I go back a long time with those guys, and Tony is not there as often, so getting to see him last night was really, really cool.
They came from another restaurant group, didn't they? Yeah.
They started with like Mateo's. They were with Mateo's.
It's that family style thing, right?
Yes, yes, like La Palma and some of the other. Yeah. But it's
I never eaten those places because it's always just Val and I, and you know how much can you eat? I mean, you know.
Well, that's true. Kerry and I have that problem over at Carmine's.
Yeah.
I guess a couple of years ago, we were in the city for the St. Patrick's Day parade, so we were there the night before. And usually we go to Carmine's with like two couples, so it's four people, and it works.
Yeah.
There, it's accentuated the family size.
Yeah, it's
platters.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
But so it was difficult. But we took staying in the city and taking home is difficult. But Carrie's son was going to meet us, so. He was very pleasantly surprised at the abundance of food.
You get a free meal, yeah.
But I always remember, I like taking my son with me to different iconic restaurants. Mm-hmm. I believe I took him to Katz's, Wohop.
Wohop, downstairs or up?
Downstairs.
Yeah, of course.
Got to do downstairs. But one of the places that I introduced him to was Junior's, which is a great, great historic legacy restaurant. And then Carmine's. But again, it was just he and I, and I wanted him to get the feel of the restaurant.
Sure.
So we probably got chicken parmesan, maybe a pasta.
That's the size of a welcome mat.
Yes, you know, yes. And then a pasta and a salad. Uh-huh. And it was just like so much food.
No. Well, it's, you know, that appeals to a certain customer base, you know. I mean, I remember my father used to. He would judge restaurants by how many sandwiches he could make the next 4 days, you know. I was always the other way. I just, you know, I want other stuff.
But that makes me question, and you would probably have the answer. When you go to Ben's, as an example, that sandwich, I'm not exaggerating, is probably
I know,
more than 3 inches thick, probably like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
It's priced accordingly. I mean, a sandwich is probably $25 there.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is, you know, it's not a $4.95 sandwich.
No, there aren't any anymore.
But so my question goes, are they doing the large size sandwich for the price point, or that's just the style?
I think it's both. I mean, I think it's the style. You know, there's that culture of abundance in the Jewish deli thing. You know, all the sandwiches are always big, the portions are always big. But they also force you to spend $25 on a sandwich, which is in their favor. You know, if they had a regular size sandwich and it'd be $16, you know, you get out of your check averages a lot lower. So they make you have, you know, they make you have more than you probably need and spend more than you probably want.
Yeah, you have to be very prudent, though, at Ben's. So believe it or not, a stuffed cabbage dinner is like $32 today.
Well, good for them. I mean, it's what keeps them in business.
But
know?
That be said, a stuffed cabbage appetizer, which is just a piece of stuffed cabbage, and it's like the beer can. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty big. It's probably $17. So Carrie's ordering, and she ordered. She loves the stuffed cabbage there, so she ordered an appetizer. I said, no. I said, no, you got to order the dinner because you get two pieces. You can bring it home, but you get two side dishes with it. And, again, it just becomes well worth it. So, again, we got the kasha, and I think we got a square. Square kish. But she disappointed me at one point. She bought the appetizer sampler, which was like going to a bar mitzvah.
Yeah, no, it's not good.
It was three pigs in the blank.
Oh, no.
I think there was potato pancake,
yeah,
and chicken fingers.
Oh, boy.
Oh, and Swedish meatballs. How they... I did not get it.
Four things I approached with a cross in my hand, you know what I mean, like a vampire.
And I actually would have thought that the meatballs would have been sort of in a stuffed cabbage, you know, tomatoey sweet sauce.
Swedish meatballs, they but they did sour in the creamy in the thing,
yeah, it was the
gravy, sour cream.
So, but you know, all in all, you know, they come to the table with that bowl of coleslaw and your pickles.
I love the coleslaw there.
And I never can guess in advance what type of pickle people are going to go for, because they usually serve...
It's one-on-one.
Sour pickle sour. And half sour or whatever.
What's the point of half sours?
I don't... I agree. So they bring it to the table. Usually
like
they're left
the
over when they come to the Schrager table.
Yeah.
But this time, the two people we were with, they grabbed...
Really?
The half sours.
Like you can't tell me... It's like finishing the job. It's like a you know... I don't know. It's like a half full glass of coffee or a half a milkshake or what, you know what? Just finish it. I mean, that's where all the flavor is. The flavor is in the sour, you know. But Ben's to me is a, you know, I can't go there often because it's just food that's going to pack me, you know. But, you know, there's something about pastrami. It's salt and fat is exactly what it is. So it's from McDonald's, why they serve a billion things, you know, it's salt and fat. So you got flavor on steroids. But again, like you say, you know, I only get a half a sandwich there because,
yeah.
You know, I do the soup and half sandwich thing. And I probably remove at least a third to a half of the meat off the sandwich so you can eat it, like, you know, without embarrassing yourself. And the rest of it, I eat like sashimi. It's like pastrami sashimi. I'm dunking it in the mustard and whatever, you know. But I love it. It's just, it's this, you know, there's certain ethnic foods that just... You're drawn to. I mean, with, you know, Italians, it's pasta or it's, you know, chicken parm. It's simple stuff, but it works, you know.
I'm giggling because, again, I went to this networking thing, and there was it was hosted by somebody whose father was a heritage political figure in the town of Oyster Bay. And he comes in, and he's probably more than 75 or 80. Mm-hmm. That's a wide span, but he comes in, and he was on a cane and everything. And his son was giving a speech, and he was in the back of the room. So he wanted to stand up to be able to see what's going on and, I guess, try to hear. But while he was standing there, it was a buffet, but they were accommodating him, and they brought him some spaghetti bolognese or whatever.
Yeah.
But the best part was he was standing eating his spaghetti bolognese.
I'm ready to make a speech, you know.
That's a real trick. I mean, you know, it would have been quite a video.
I can show you how to do it. I mean, we eat standing up all the time. I mean, I can't remember the last time I sat down to a meal when I was working.
Yeah, but you would probably be holding the bowl in your hand and twirling the spaghetti and feeding yourself.
You know what I eat out of? We eat out of the, and I drink. I have the plastic quart containers and half quart containers. So the half-quart containers is what I generally eat family meal out of, and the quart containers is I do seltzer, you know, all day, one or the other, you know.
But this guy had the bowl on the table standing. He wasn't very tall, so it was okay.
Well, that's an advantage.
And next thing I do, I look over, and it's gone.
Yeah.
He ate it all. So he got it done.
You know, politicians are capable of some incredible feats of, you know. I'm sitting there listening to some stuff on TV, you know, with the politicians. I make twice what the average senator makes, maybe more than that. I have one-tenth of their wealth. It's like incredible. How are we broke as a country with all these geniuses down here who can turn $30,000 into $6 million in 2 years? You know?
Yeah, no, it's and we could learn it to a thing by these politicians. So
I think it's a thing or two. But
So the guy gives a speech, and they're waiting for somebody else in the political party to show up, and they were on different schedules, and then the politician goes, I need to leave to record a radio show. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
and
me
then
too.
And then I watched him go into his Suburban in the parking lot and call into the radio show.
Oh, really?
So you know, you and I don't have to get together anymore. We
no,
should probably
remotely,
yeah, you know,
call you from the car. Yeah, that should work over real well. So listen, I went to a real restaurant last night.
Real
Eduardo's over in Huntington. Have you been there?
No,
it's really good. I mean, he just put in a bar. It used to be kind of like a bakery slash Italian pastry shop, and then he, you know, he started making real food, you know, pasta, real food, I shouldn't say that, pastas and things like that, Italian. And he's very good at it. And now it's kind of like a full-blown restaurant. It's right in front of Farm Italy in Huntington. You know, Farm Italy is like set back off the road. He's right on whatever that 110 there, right on the corner. And cool little place, man. It's he's got a bar now, which is nice. That's where I spend most of my time, apparently. That's what I've been told. And then he's got a bunch of tables. He's got a little, like, kind of a alcove in the back where we sat last night. And I guess he seats about 45 people, 50 people. But the guy's really good. we had a, what do we have last night? We had a grilled butternut squash with crispy prosciutto, which kind of wasn't really what I thought it was going to be. I thought we were going to have slices of butternut squash that were caramelized, but it was more like mashed potato. It wasn't bad. And they had they kind of described it with a cacio e pepe sauce, which I thought was going to be a little creamy. It was more like a yogurt. It was kind of the thickness of a yogurt. And it tasted great. It was fine. You know, just it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And then we had, what else did we have? We had prosciutto with pineapple and hazelnuts. That was good. And we had one other appetizer. I'm trying to think of what it was now. I don't remember. Anyway, so Val got to pick the entree. And, we usually split a pasta. And they had, we had one on a special I was looking at. It was a fusilli with zucchini and some... I guess it was Reggiano cheese and some prosciutto. And she was looking at the one with an anchovy sauce with walnuts and chilies. And so I said, you know, I deferred. You know, okay, you have that. You know, anchovies to me, I like the fresh ones. The canned ones to me, I leave me a little short. It's like a salt lick, you know. And the pasta was fine. It was well done. I mean, the dish was exactly what it was supposed to be. And I ate it. I can eat anything. It's too much anchovy is a little too salty for me. So I get home and I'm thinking my ankles are going to look like, like some church lady from the South, you know, when they stick their foot and it looks like they're proofing bread out of their shoes, you know. That's what it looked like when I got home. I'm like, better get some water in yourself, Thomas. You're going to be parched tomorrow, you know. But all in all, I mean, I've had several meals at Eduardo's. I've probably been here 7-8 times, I guess, something like that. And they're always very good. He does a great ravioli with the egg yolk in it and spinach and the cheese, you know, which I always enjoy. And, I can't recommend it highly enough. I mean, if you're in, you know, there's a lot of Italian restaurants around, but there aren't a lot that do, you know, hardcore Italian food. A lot of them are doing the Italian-American thing, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's fine. It's great. You know, some of those places are fabulous and they're busy, and I'm glad. But I kind of look for more of a sort of authenticity, you know, like my friend Marco Pellegrino over at Osteria Umbra. Mm-hmm. He cooks like he's in Italy, not like he's here. That's what was always great about Mario Batali. I mean, his whole personality issues notwithstanding. I mean, he cooked. He didn't make any compromises. You know, he said, I'm going to do in New York City the way I learned it in Italy. And he did. And he was very successful. You know, very successful until he went off the cliff. But, you know, it was for other reasons. But the bottom line is, he did a calf's brains ravioli. I mean, how many restaurants on Long Island would have the courage to put that on the menu? I certainly wouldn't, because I know it's not going to sell, you know. But he did, and he was very successful at it. And I think a little more of that, you know, if we could find some people, maybe even myself, maybe even, you know, I try and do a little of that at Amano. But, you know, you always have to worry about the economics of a restaurant. It's always a balance between art and economics. You want to do what you want to do, but you also, you know, hope that people are going to receive it. And when you have all these tried and true formulas, you know, the chicken parmesans of the world and the spaghetti and meatballs to simplify it, you know, lasagna, you kind of, you know, you want to kind of sometimes, you know, cop to that because you're afraid that, you know, people are going to look at your menu and go, well, octopus and bone marrow? I don't know, you know. So, you know, there's a place over in Douglaston. I can never remember the name of it. It's if you go, there's a corner there.
Oh, I know what it is.
You know what it is? It's El Toscano. Great little restaurant, right? He's been there 100 years. And he does a lasagna, and they kind of make it to order, you know. And it's fabulous. You know, it's not that big, cheesy thing, you know. It's the way, you know, Marcella Hazan would make the lasagna. There's no like ricotta cheese in here. It's just basically bolognese and Reggiano and a little bit of bechamel. And it's light. You can eat an order of it and not feel like you swallowed a Volkswagen. You know what I mean? It's, you know, it's nice and it's light and you can, you know, have that, a bottle of wine or something, and go home and not feel like you got to lay on a couch and moan.
So last week I talked about, I had the opportunity of eating at Osteria Isabel on Park Avenue in Manhattan. And I said I had a dish that was interesting. And apparently it was called Lamache, which Lamache, which I now understand is a
pasta.
It's a snail shaped pasta shell.
Yes.
And the when I asked, I was with somebody who was familiar with the restaurant. He suggested it.
Yeah.
So I tried it, and it was pork ragu, lemon, rosemary, chili, with a whipped ricotta.
Yeah,
and it was delightful.
Yeah, sounds great. I would order that in a heartbeat.
It was very, very nice.
Yeah, you know, pork, I do a Chingali ragu a lot. You know, it's a wild boar, which is pork, essentially. It's not much difference. They don't taste gamey or anything like that. It's, but it's such a good pasta, you know, hearty. You know, a little more in the winter I do than the summer. I tend to, you know, I got some corn ravioli this weekend we're doing, and, you know, some interesting, you know, kind of fun things that are lighter. But it's nothing like a good pork ragu. I mean, when you take, you know, I use pork shoulder, pork butt, same thing. And I'll braise that down till it falls apart. And when you do that, I mean, the flavor is just insane, you know, because there's a lot of fat in pork. And that melts into the sauce, which flavors it, like, incredibly. I think more so than, you know, a lot of people do, you know, like a short rib pasta. It does. It's leaner, you know, and it's fine. It's good, you know, but there's something about the pork fat that just, you know, now, what's better than bacon?
Now, you were just talking about Il Toscano. Is that down by the train station?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So and another restaurant in that area is Il Bosco. El Baco.
Baco, yeah.
Which is a very nice restaurant. I guess that's more in Little Neck on, on Northern Boulevard or whatever.
There's an El Buco in the city. Have you been to El Buco?
No.
That's
Buco, Baco.
Yeah. Bingo, bango. it's really as good an Italian experience as you're going to have. They have two. They have La Alimentaria El Buco. That's, I don't remember exactly where that is. I think it's downtown also. But El Buco is, it's in Soho. And Soho, I think it's on Great Jones Street. No, it's probably not Soho. It's downtown. But it's very small. And it looks almost like an antique shop when you walk in there. It's really interestingly decorated. But their menus are, if you look up a menu from Il Buco, you'll see they have olive oil tastings there. It's very interesting. They do a lot with vegetables. I love it. I think it's one of the better restaurants in Manhattan. And unheralded. You know, they don't seem to talk about it too much. And it's a shame because it's really good. They opened up a branch out in Amagansett a couple of years ago. I don't know if it's still there or not. I haven't been on the south side in a while. But they were in Amagansett for a while. The chef is a very talented kid. His food is killer. And Alimentaria is a little bit more casual. You know, they have pizzas and I think some paninis and stuff like that. But if you ever get a chance to go, you know, I'm digressing here from Il Baco to Il Buco. But, you know, Il Buco to me is as memorable a place as I've ever been in. And great fun if you're really into Italian food. Good place to go.
So somehow you were in the newspaper the other day.
How'd that happen?
I understand you have a new landlord at one of your locations.
Oh, yeah.
Port of Egypt.
The Port of Egypt Marina. Yeah, it was sold. And it was funny because we were all, I didn't know it was for sale, you know. And apparently the owner didn't either. So he came to me and he said, you know, it just happened. You know, these things just don't happen at the $6-8 million, whatever, you know. Those things take a little time, you know. There's this negotiation back and forth, and somebody's got to make an offer, and somebody's got to counter. It's
well, fortunately, it does not seem to have affected your enterprise, which is Allure, which is located there.
Well, it may affect it. The thing is, you know, I don't know what the landlord is going to do about our lease. I'm in the last year of my lease there anyway. So we'll either, you know, get a lease for another 5 or 10 year period or whatever they're thinking. Year to year, sometimes they want to go. Or at the end, if they decide, you know what, we're going to renovate the whole place and we're going to do this and that and the other thing, I'm out.
Well, so, unless you purchase a houseboat and dock it there.
Well, I have an alternate plan. I mean, there's another location that I'm looking at. And if I do that, I'll have a big surprise for you because it's going to be a very interesting sort of thing. But, you know, that I don't want to, you know, get ahead of my skis here. But I think that, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I'll talk to these people. You know, I don't know. I don't know if they're reasonable, not reasonable. I don't know what their intentions are. I guess they'll make that known pretty quickly. But I have it at least until December. My lease is up in December. So, you know, which is, listen, if we do re-up it, fine. If we don't, I'm okay with that too. It doesn't matter to me, you know. But I shouldn't say it doesn't matter to me. I just, I'm okay with it both ways.
So, I think we're going to be taking the radio show on the road. We got an invitation from Al from Smoking Al's.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a new menu release coming up.
Wow.
And he's invited us to come down and record our show from there. And so as many of our listeners might know, Smoking Al's is a proud sponsor of Playing With Fire, and we appreciate much. And it will be interesting to find out what he has up his sleeve. It's interesting to go on Smoking Al's Instagram page. I did that the other day, and there was the Bow Wow Wow or something, which is a giant hot dog. And apparently Al's sourced this, like, 18-inch hot dog or something.
Yikes.
Which is so big that he cannot use, he can't find a roll for it, so he puts two next to each other.
Yeah.
But it's an incredible entree. Again, it's this huge hot dog, and he puts beans on it, chili on it, crinkly onions, surrounds the plate with french fries.
Home wrecker.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's always interesting to see the Instagram page for Smoking Al's. So, to our listeners, check it out. And then I saw another friend of the radio show the other day, JoJo from Bagel Boss.
How's he doing?
He's doing great. He misses JoJo. You much. JoJo has two locations of Bagel Boss. He has Oceanside, which is on, I forget what street.
It's on
Oceanside
street.
Road.
Oceanside Road.
And then he has the Bagel Boss in Merrick, which is on Merrick Road.
Doesn't he have one in Car Place, too, in that shopping center?
There's one there, but I don't think he's involved with that.
Okay.
But, here he is calling us.
Yeah. Whoa.
But Al was talking about, JoJo was talking about, he lives over at the Versailles, which was the former home of
The Vanderbilt,
I'm sorry. Maybe that's
Versailles in France.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
The Vanderbilt in Westbury. So it's sort of adjacent to Target in that area on a Corporate Drive, I guess it's called.
Corporate Drive, yeah.
So in the heyday, there was a guy named Tom Shawdell, which had a restaurant there called Kingfish.
Yes, I did.
Which was an incredible restaurant, both with ambiance as well as the food selection. I mean, you know, it's funny. You don't usually remember restaurants for serving fish and chips, but I do.
Yeah, the only problem with Kingfish is we had an incredible pandemic.
But the decor was incredible. First of all, you walked in through the lobby of the Vanderbilt, which was a condominium.
It's a complex. It's a rentals, really.
You know? So you'd walk into Tom's restaurant, Kingfish, and you'd walk into a raw bar. So there was actually, instead of a drinking bar, was a raw bar. And you could sit there and dine on oysters and clams and shrimp. It was pretty incredible. And the decor was the small tiles that, I guess they call it subway tile. And it was exposed air vents. I happen to like the color orange, and there was highlights of orange, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that was all done by a woman named Sharon Gendon. She has her and her sister have a restaurant design firm over in Lynbrook. and East Rockaway, I guess it is, and DeLago. Her married name is Genden, G-E-N-D-E-N, but they're the DeLago sisters. And I used to liken them to Heart because they're both very pretty women. One's blonde, one's brunette. It looks like, you know, the band Heart. And when I first met them when I did Cool Fish, when I did Jewel, and I had a choice of designers. I had a pretty big budget at Jewel. So I looked at a guy from the city. I looked at a guy from up in Massachusetts who I had done some work with before in Eli's. And I chose them for a couple of reasons. One is I really liked them personally. And two is they were right here, so if I had to go yell at somebody, I could drive over. I wouldn't have to fly anywhere. We'll go into Manhattan. And three, I just loved their whole vibe and their enthusiasm. And
well, what's so interesting,
brilliant, man, when it comes to this.
What's so interesting is your Jewel was so ornate and incredible, the originality of it. But they've also done the decor for Mogu, which is an abstract Asian restaurant that has a unique cooking style.
Yeah, they have a commissary.
They have a commissary, and then they airless fry, and it's pre-programmed with barcodes. And when they put it into their cooking device, it automatically cooks.
Yeah, it's a gadget, you know. But she's really brilliant. She's talented. I mean, she does all Uncle Jack's locations. They build all over the world. I don't know about the world. I know all over the country. And I just love their designs. I mean, they have this aesthetic that's great. I mean, she was the one that pitched me on the upside down lamps.
Well, those are incredible.
And I'm like, what? You know, I don't know about this, you know. And I went home and I thought about it. And I said, you know, I go back to when I was doing consulting. You know, people pay you, but they don't listen to you. And then when it all goes off the rails, they blame you for it, you know. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to be that customer. I'm not going to be that guy. I hired this woman for a reason. She obviously knows more about this than I do because everything she does looks way better than everything I ever did as far as inside restaurants go. I'm just going to let her go. And she told me, she goes, don't worry, it's going to be one of the most talked about aspects of the place. And it certainly was, you know, that in the bathroom, which was my idea, by the way. But the lamps were brilliant, you know.
Well, it's really funny because you had that unique bathroom that women would line up outside for the men's room.
They would.
But it reminded me, in St. Louis Obispo, the Madonna Inn, it was the same thing. They had like theirs was different. It was like a waterfall and beautiful rock sculptures. But the women, everybody would line up to go into it. Your men's room, it was like a paparazzi scene. You'd walk in and the light bulb.
There were real light bulbs in the cameras.
But it looked like the old-fashioned flash
like
bulbs.
The 50s, yeah.
Yeah, and it would go, hey, big boy. when I walked in.
Well, of course, yeah. What else could they possibly say, you know? I'll behave right now. We had six or seven different sayings.
Yes.
We had people, you know. My daughter recorded one. I recorded one. Sharon's sister, Karen DeLago, recorded one. I think Sharon recorded one. It was fun. We had a good time with it, you know. It was great. And, you know, I restaurants, I was saying this to my partner the other day, you know, they got to be fun now, you know. First of all, food has to be good. That's, you know, it's kind of a given. But I was talking about the difference the other day to a friend of mine between a 3-star restaurant and a 4-star restaurant. And I always said, I would rather have a 3-star restaurant because it's not as serious, you know. You go to these Michelin's a different story. They don't have 4, they have 3. But it's the difference between a Michelin 3 and a Michelin 2 or Michelin 1 is that the Michelin 3 or the 4-star restaurant on Long Island has to be, it's like going to a religious service, you know. Everybody's quiet, the thing is tinkling. I remember when I went to Ducasse's restaurant when he opened in the city, it was the first time I saw pocketbook stands, you know, next to the seat. Then they come over, when you signed your check, you had a choice of 8 different pens to use, you know. They would follow you and escort you to the men's room. I had a salt tasting. They came out, you know, after the entree, and they had a plate of salt. Would you like the black salt from Brittany or the pink salt from the Himalayas? How about the kosher salt from the Isle of Long, you know? I mean, it was just, it's so over the top that, you know, it's kind of hard for me to, you know, just relax. And I feel like I'm, I don't know. I feel like I got to, I feel like I, when I go to church or something, you know, it's just, and meanwhile, you know, to get a 3-star restaurant like Gotham Bar and Grill, which was my favorite forever in the city, you know, the food was just as good. It wasn't as serious. You could actually talk. You could raise your voice. You could people watch, you know. You could go to the bathroom by yourself. You didn't have to have an escort, you know. Just much more casual and fun, and the food is just as good. So I think that, you know, the fun aspect, when the fun aspect comes out of the restaurant, I don't know. It's just like La Bernardin. I'm supposed to go to La Bernardin with my friend Danny, who's a wine importer, right? And he goes, you want to go to La Bernardin? I'm thinking, yeah, like I want an enema. You know, I've been there a couple of times. The food's great. I mean, guys, it's a great job, but it's way too serious for me at this point. I want to have fun when I go out. I want to relax. I don't want to have a tie on. I don't want to have to, you know, sit there and keep my mouth shut while the next course is coming. And I don't know. I was saying to the manager at the club, the new manager, that, you know, I've probably eaten in every tasting restaurant in the United States 10 times at this point in my life. And, you know, of course, I'm exaggerating for a point, but the bottom line is I don't know if I want to eat like that anymore. I don't know if I want to go to an 8-course, 9-course, 10-course tasting. I was talking about Alinea in Chicago. You know, there's a 24-course tasting menu there. I've had it a couple times, you know. It's, you know, after the 21st course, you're ready to go. You know what I mean? It's like 4 hours later, it's get me out of here. You know, I mean, I just want to go home, you know. So I don't know. It's just, I think that the restaurants that are kind of thriving are the ones that are, you know, busy and kind of fun. And, you know, you get to taste a couple of things, you know, those small plates places. And, you know, those seem to be thriving now.
So going back to the Vanderbilt, Jojo was saying there's a new restaurant there.
Yeah, the Comet Club.
The Comet Club. And apparently it's it blends the New York's Gilded Age with the cocktail glam of 1920s Miami and Havana. And it has Chef Jesse Schenker, whose Long Island restaurant portfolio has until now been focused on Oyster Bay.
Yeah, he owns a couple of places in Oyster Bay. He has Two Spring, and then next to it, Four Spring, which is like a tasting room. And then he has Gioia, which is a little like pasta Italian thing. And I think he's got a burger place up there, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, there's a lot of press about that place. I don't know what how familiar you are or have heard about it.
Oh, yeah. No, I know about it. I mean, I haven't been there, you know. The whole problem with the Vanderbilt is the parking situation. It's difficult, you know.
But I've heard they've really turned it around. I'm told there's like 5 valet staff
there. I know,
but
that's a problem because 5 valet is $500, you know what I mean? You got to make a lot of, you know, gilded cocktails to pay for the, you know, valet. We had valet there. But, you know, at the end of the month, your valet, you know, bill was $3,000, you know. It's like a lot of money. You know?
It's interesting. Westbury seems to be the up-and-coming locality for new restaurants. Farm Italy opened up there.
Well, it's the same people that own the Vanderbilt, own the Shelby.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So they're going off the model that they have in Florida. There's a, you know, there's a bunch of, like, Danielle. If you go to Restaurant Danielle in the city, which is very high-end, Michelin 3, 2, whatever it is, he opened in a condo complex in Palm Beach. You know, so they have these condo complexes down there with these high-end restaurants in them, and that's the model that they're using.
So they also have the Shed, which is the same ownership. But and we've talked about it. I've been to Farm Italy in Westbury, and I said I was there on a Sunday night, and it's in the middle of a condominium complex, just like you said. Mm. And it felt like a club. You know, it seemed very much a part of the condominium complex.
Sure.
It's great. It's like country club living.
Yeah, you have a captive audience there, you know, and they have a much better location. And, you know, Merrick Avenue there is a busy road. A, B, they have parking. C, you can see it right from the road.
Yeah, there's an incredible amount of parking over
the Vanderbilt, you know, is like it's one block removed from the main artery. And if you don't know what's there, you don't know what's there, you know. And then you have the parking issues, which are difficult over there. And like I said, you know, we had valet. You have to have valet there. But the valet is, it's a huge expense. You know, people don't realize how much it is. And then some people, I don't want
that. That's funny. I was oblivious to that because, you know, I think I mentioned when I was talking to Jojo that, you know, when you had Kingfish there, that parking was a problem. And he goes, oh, no, no. Now they got like five valet, you know, yeah, people. Well,
but not a problem
but
for
it doesn't
parker.
Refer to yeah. to the
parking is
proprietor.
A problem for the restaurant. Yeah, yes, it's not a yes, problem yes. for the people parking. You know, unless you know, we've had people with valets. You know, they stole my thing, and you know, I smell smoke in air. And oh God, here
I
we
wonder
go.
If the Vanderbilt still has. There was like a coffee shop or a snack bar or
it
something,
was, yeah.
and I wonder if that survived.
I don't know. Like I said, I haven't been in there since I sold it. You know, the owners were gracious enough to buy it back from me, which saved me actually a lot of money. And I guess it was worth it for them, too, because they, you know, they wanted to get the right guy in there, you know.
But again, it was such a cool restaurant, Cool Fish. Again, you walked into the raw bar. If you made a sharp left, there was the liquor bar.
The main bar, yeah.
The main bar. And if you... behind the raw bar, common table, because it was a long table, and behind it was just like going to the fish market. You had, you know, all filled with ice and again, oysters and clams.
Yeah.
And then if you walk straight back, I guess was the pool area. So
yeah.
you
yeah,
looked out on the
there,
the
yeah.
patio.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever got the opportunity to take advantage of that.
We did, you know. The whole problem, we were actually pretty busy there. We, you know, it was initially, you know, getting it off the ground was a fairly heavy lift because of where it was and the parking issues and all the other stuff. But the bottom line is we had it rolling, you know. And then, you know, it was February or March of 20, and then it all just went to you know what, you know. So it was what it was. I mean, you know, listen, these things, you know, restaurants... Look, A, they're a huge gamble. B, the mortality rate is tremendous. So if you're going to be in the game, you have to be prepared for, you know, some problems. And, you know, like I said, I don't know. I've had 20-something restaurants. I've had two go down and one that wasn't my fault, one that was, and then the pandemic was the third one.
So when you vacate a property like that, again, it was quite interestingly... populated with furniture and tables.
Yeah.
And, do you just walk away from that, or are you able to sell it?
Well, it depends on what your deal is. You know what I mean? If you know, if like I have tables and chairs in Allure, right? So if they say we're not going to renew the lease, well, that's all my stuff. You know, I'll take it out and I'll put it in storage and use it someplace else to sell it or whatever I'm going to do, you know? But it depends on the deal. I mean, the guys, you know, who I can't say enough about the Dubs is the family that owns... the Vanderbilt, DUBB, Mike and his son, and they were as stand up. I've been very fortunate. I've had one bad landlord. It was my first one, and then you know I had the Reckler family, you know, Cool Fish, fabulous people. Can't say enough good things about them. The Dubs over in what you call it. Can't say enough about them. Great guys. They really went out of their way to help me out. And, you know, again, bought it back when it was obvious that, you know, the whole pandemic thing was about to just crash and burn it, you know. My landlord was my partner over in Jewel, so, you know, you can't get a better deal than that.
Is my recollection right, if you went to the right in the restaurant, you walked through doors into what could have been a private catering area?
I had the ability, we had garage doors there. So I could either leave it open like we do on Saturday night for business. Obviously, we needed the tables. Or I could shut it down and have a private party.
That's pretty cool. So yeah. Garage doors is an interior wall.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No, she's great. She's one of the best designers I've ever come in contact with. And I've seen a few. I've seen, you know, a couple of guys, Rockwell, who I interviewed, you know, from the city. Adam, what's his name? Tahani or... Oh, I can't think of his name now. He's an Asian guy, but he's a brilliant designer. He actually did West End Cafe.
Oh, really?
And I tried to hire him for Cool Fish, but he was only doing international properties with big hotels. And I said, well, what about West End? You did West End. He says, well, it was a favor for a friend, so whatever.
And you had an interesting collection of fish prints at the restaurant.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I bought them from a guy, Van Dinkste is his last name. I can't remember his first name. He's in Massachusetts. And he does these, I don't remember the Japanese name for it, but it's a fish print. It started in Japan years and years ago, Japanese being ecologically conscious, you know, they would catch a fish and they wouldn't want to kill it. So they would dip it in ink and press it onto rice paper to come home and show, you know, the size of this fluke I caught or whatever, you know. And it caught on, and now it's a process that these guys do. I have a couple of those in my house. I have one of a white shark, a baby white shark, that's probably 8 feet long, you know.
You had some sculpture or something at Cool Fish in the day, either behind the bar or when you walked in, like, adjacent to the bar on the wall. Was it like a bone sculpture of fish or something?
No, that wasn't. That was an artist. His name is Alex Echo, ECHO, and he was an artist who had a very interesting style. And what he would do is he would take a canvas, and he would take something like the Pledge of Allegiance, let's say, and he would just write the Pledge of Allegiance in all kind of, paint it in all different fonts, over and over and over again until it became this mishmash of stuff, you know, that had kind of a design to it. He did the Lord's Prayer for a friend of mine, you know, a small one over the doorway. I've seen him do the Declaration of Independence. And for me, he did Cool Fish's menu.
Oh.
Over and over and over again on a huge piece of wood. I guess it's about 6-7 feet long by about 3 feet high, something like that. And I have that in my house out in Jamesport. But yeah, that's what that was. And you, if you look real close, you can see a couple things. You'll see like clams on a half shell or whatever, you know. And he had the Cool Fish logo throughout there because that was on the menu.
That was an interesting laid out restaurant also, Cool Fish. You sort of walked into the first floor or basement of a business.
First floor, yeah.
And when you walked in, you had the bar on the like left side.
Yeah, yeah.
But then if you went to the right, I guess was the dining room, which was sort of like partitioned with half walls or something.
No, well, we had the area we used to call the fishbowl, which was kind of, it was glassed off from the main dining room. It was still part of the bar, you know.
Yes, that's and where I saw you perform with your band.
Yeah, and then we had the dining room was split with, I had a half brick wall there.
Yes, yes.
And you had one step up the dining room there and one step down the dining room there. Cool Fish, you know, we inherited that whole thing. I mean, that layout was there when I got there. That had been two or three restaurants before.
That was an incredible restaurant.
Oh, Cool Fish was great, man.
I mean, it started off with the bread basket. I mean, I just know it was very impressive. I took clients there all the time. Again, wonderful memory of the past.
Yeah, me too. I mean, we were there 15 years. It was a long time, you know. But the thing with, you know, with Cool Fish is I had, again, the lease was coming up, you know. The building was sold. It was not Reckler anymore. It was RXR, which was a branch, one of the cousins on it. And it was all too corporate for me. I'm a handshake guy. I want the landlord to know who I am. I want to, you know, have a relationship with him. And it went from, I used to call him Mitchell Reckler, who was the best landlord ever. I mean, just a super guy, you know, upstanding, honest, great guy, right? I call him up, Mitch, I got a problem with the plumbing. Okay, send a plumber down, you know. Now, all of a sudden, RXO has it. I got a problem with the plumbing. Okay, well, you have to submit a form. Bring that over. We got to wait 30 days. Here we go, you know. So my lease was up, or coming up, and I had an offer, right? So I'm weighing, do I stay, do I go, do I stay, do I go?
That could be a song.
Yeah.
Or should I stay, or should I go?
It's pretty good. And you know, the windows of opportunity open when they open, and you either jump through or they close, you know. So I said, well, I could be here another 10 years with a landlord that I don't know if he's going to be nice to me or not, or I can free myself from this and go on. So I chose to do the latter, you know. And I miss it, you know. I mean, look, I made a lot of friends in Syosset, that area. It's a wonderful place. People are great, you know. They're very supportive, you know, very supportive of what I was doing. And I can't say enough good things about
there, that was an interesting area in the day. There used to be the Viennese Coach was in Viennese that area. Coach, there was like a movie theater or something.
Yeah, 150, Cinema 150. That was on the corner of 135, just east of 135.
Then there's further west, there was like a pond or something, and there was a restaurant looking over that. Maybe it's an Asian restaurant now. Oh. Hilltop recently opened over
Hilltop's there.
Just a very interesting. And in the day, right by where Coolfish was, further east, just a little bit east, wasn't there like an Italian restaurant
was,
or something?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it, but yeah, it was the guy with the big handlebar mustache and a hat, you know. Can't think of his name either. But it's funny, you know, Coolfish, I was approached about maybe a year ago, at the most, to go back in there. You know, somebody was trying to get me to go back into that location. But that's like remarrying your ex-wife, you know, which I did once.
So,
but I know it's a bad idea.
Wait, so the guy with the big mustache, wasn't there another restaurant in Plainview? It was a friend of yours. You used to always talk Italian restaurant.
Oh, Luigi. Luigi Q.
Yes.
Luigi was the best. I don't know what happened to him. I mean, he sold a place and I haven't heard from him. I haven't seen him. But I love Luigi. Luigi was the best. He was a great chef. Who was basically working the dining room. He trained a bunch of Spanish kids in the kitchen. They were great, you know. And, you know, he was like the impresario. He was just a character.
That was a nice restaurant, but I must say, I'm not even using my own judgment, but it was considered expensive.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that's what good food is. It is expensive. And Luigi was a character. I mean, if he didn't like you, he'd throw you out. Like, if you wore shorts, he wouldn't let you in with shorts. He wouldn't let children in there. He was out of his mind. He was so much fun to visit because I would go in there, right? And he got to me one time. He had brought back some vegetables from Italy.
Yes,
he pickled the vegetables. Would you like to try a pickled vegetable? Yeah. So he gives me a slice of carrot, two pieces of celery, and an onion. It was $25 on a bill. He puts it on the bill. I'm like, what? And he goes, hey, you know, I got a nice wine for you, Tom. All right, you bring it over. $250. Thanks, Luigi. You know, he tried to pick up my mother one time. It was hilarious. You know?
He was a funny guy.
Oh, great.
I remember I left my credit card there one night, so I went back, like, if we went there Friday or Saturday or whatever, I went back Monday, and the restaurant was closed for lunch. It wasn't open for lunch, but he had, like, a lounge chair in the bar that he had opened up. He was snoring.
Yeah, that's him. You know, the first time I met him, I was taken there by the people at Banffy because I used to do their catering all the time. So they invited me to lunch, right? Have you been to Luigi Q's? I said, no. He says, oh, it's a great Italian restaurant. Lars Light was there. And I think Michelle Strollo was with us or her husband. Anyway, so we go there, right? I get there at like, I don't know, 11:45. We were drinking like grappa at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, 6 hours, right? I'm home. I got an ice pack on my head. I'm like, gee, I can't go to work, you know? This is terrible.
So do you remember that Banffy used to be a sponsor of Playing With Fire in the day?
I did, yeah. I remember that, yeah. Thanks, Tom. Yeah, they were Banffy, I miss them. They were great people. I had a lot
of
fun. So,
you know, this thing about day drinking, we'll talk about it another time, but I had a half a day of work on a Friday recently and went out with some friends, and they're busy drinking bottle after bottle of wine. I had like a little couple of sips or whatever. I went home at 6 o'clock, and next thing I knew, it was 2 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. No, that's terrible. Well, listen, speaking of losing track of time, we're going to end the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which is life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last. Keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza, and we'll see you next week.
Come on now, everybody, get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's. It's
spring and summer is right behind. It's time for Smoke and Al's Party Catering Menu. Make your next party at Smoke and One with Al's Ribs, barbecue meats, chicken, appetizers, and a whole lot more. Try Al's new fantasy platters in the comfort of your backyard or one of Al's party packages. The weather is heating up and the party is smoking. Smoke and Al's, Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoke and Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoke and Al's.